out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 23rd of March, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, as it's Friday, we're joined by Florian Geyer from Mysterium Fasces. Florian, how are you doing today?
Doing just fine, Sven. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, we're having a good day. I'm having a good day in Britain. You're having a good day over there in Canada, but it doesn't look like the French people are having a very good day in France. It looks like they're having another instance of Islamic terrorism. And it's only been, 4 months, I believe, since the last one back in November. And currently, as we go to air, I think the incident is now finished. The guy that carried it out is now actually dead. But there are a lot of points involved in this that I think we can bring up for discussion today. And what I've got a quote which describes what's happened, and then we can go into all the ramifications of it. An ISIS kebab has shot dead a shop worker and customer after killing a hostage and then taking more hostages at a French supermarket following a drive-by shooting that injured an off-duty officer. Shots were heard as the Muslim stormed into a Super U at around 11:15 a.m. in the town of Trèbes, southwest France, screaming, "Allahu Akbar, I will kill you all." Customers and workers fled in terror, but a butcher and a shopper are believed to have been killed, and about a dozen more are injured. The hostage taker, said to be in his 30s, is a Moroccan sand digger and known to police. He is believed to be armed with knives, a gun and grenades, and is demanding the release of Salah Abdeslam, the last surviving suspect in the 2015 ISIS torture massacre attack in the Paris Bataclan. Abdeslam is also of Moroccan descent, but holds a French passport, and is currently in solitary confinement in a high-security prison awaiting trial. The same armed man is believed to have shot and injured a policeman in the city of Carcassonne, about 15 minutes by car from Trèbes, after opening fire on 4 officers from a car while they were jogging. He is said to have fired 6 shots at police officers, all members of the city's CRS 57 unit, while shouting, "Vengeance for Syria," before driving off in a hijacked car and killing the hostage he had with him. The injured officer is not in life-threatening condition. A French military officer later swapped himself for one of the hostages, and the jihadi has now been shot dead by French police. So once again, we have an Islamic attack in France, and France is the country in Europe with the most Muslims in it, so obviously it has the most Islamic attacks. And quite clearly, all of our European governments don't seem to understand that, apart from the East European ones, and certainly not France, who has failed to close her borders, failed to deport any of these that have carried out these crimes, and are just as hot on criticism of immigration and criticism of Islam as Britain and Germany. Now, there are a lot of topics here that I think we can go into. The first thing, I think, is questioning what he said. I mean, vengeance for Syria. He said vengeance for Syria. But surely the... Do you know what I mean? Britain is going after Bashar al-Assad?
Yeah.
It's confusing, isn't it?
So there's a couple of things that come to mind here. I mean, yeah, as you say, it's a little bit confusing. It's a non sequitur because the only thing that the French have done is actually arm Islamists in Syria to fight against, you know, the secular and Russian regimes, the Assad regime. And so it seems kind of a strange kind of utterance. But the only thing that, you know, who knows what could be behind that? Maybe there's some, deeper story here, or there's some sort of, hidden propaganda angle to this utterance that we don't know, or perhaps he was just excited and he said something that he thought was sounded snappy. And that's one thing that I think most of our listeners probably are aware of, but for those of you who have never had the opportunity to meet or deal with Arabic people in person, is that Arabic people have an extremely strong racial identity and mindset and understanding, because most of them come from a tribal background. And so those who come from a tribal background, or who even the cosmopolitan Arab cities, they see themselves very explicitly as Arabs, and they see other Arab people as their cousins. And in fact, the idea that they're all descended from Abraham and from Ishmael, that they're these Ishmaelite race, this is at the forefront of their kind of racial cultural mindset. And it has been for thousands and thousands of years, even, going back thousands of years when the Muslims were engaging in the conquest of Europe, much like we're seeing now. You read these old texts that would constantly, these prayers that would ask God to defend us against the Ishmaelite hordes and so on. And so perhaps in the context of his kind of racial kindred for the situation in Syria, this is what he was referring to. But it's most curious, as you point out.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The fact he's actually from Morocco, and yet he's saying vengeance in Syria, vengeance for Syria. Perhaps he was thinking maybe this attack would get blamed on Assad. Maybe he wasn't thinking straight, but I mean, it really is confusing. In one moment to identify yourself as Islamic State, and in the next say it's vengeance for Syria. Perhaps he means for France not going in to Syria, not going in hard enough. I know that the Islamic militants in Syria have been saying that, haven't they? They've been saying that they're blaming America, blaming France for not going after Bashar al-Assad, and now they're all being flattened by Russia, and they're blaming the West for not giving them enough assistance. But surely paying all their wages, dropping all these weapons off there for them, I mean, they've done more than enough to help the Islamic State. It is very bizarre and contradictory. And the next thing that I wanted to bring up was the fact that he's supporting Abdus Salam. Now, Abdus Salam was responsible for the Bataclan massacre. This has got to be the worst, most horrific Islamic attack that we've actually had in Europe. 130 deaths, 419 injuries, and 99 of those injuries were critical. And we weren't told what actually went on in that concert hall. I mean, they were chopping off people's genitals and feeding them to them. The most barbaric, horrific tortures you could ever imagine went on in that concert hall. And still, we have Muslims in Europe. Nobody has got rid of them. And they hid the barbarity of this attack from the French people. You still won't find it in any mainstream media. You'll only find information about it in the alternative media. And I think this plays into it, this barbarity of non-whites. I mean, it's not because he's a Muslim that they carry out these horrific attacks. I think it's because of the Negro blood that they've got in them. If you look at this guy, they're both from Morocco. This Abdus Salam that carried out all the tortures in the Bataclan, he was from Morocco, and the Moroccans, they are Arabs. Morocco is still a part of Africa, but they have this Negro blood in them. And if you look at the rest of Africa, if you look at, take for instance, Rwanda, there are 1 million people murdered there in 3 months, 2 million people maimed. The population there is now 70% women. And this was all carried out just in 3 months in 1994. There were mass rapes with gun barrels and sticks, absolutely barbaric. And half the population that is left now have got arms or legs missing, where they just butchered each other with hatchets. And nobody really knows what it was about. It's just this explosion of violence that the Negroes are well known for. And we see this barbarity in the Arabs they like to chop people's hands off if they're caught stealing. They like to throw people off buildings. They like to crucify people. They like to whip people. You know, they have this violent law system with violent retribution because the people that they are trying to keep under the law are violent, barbaric people. It's just natural. It comes naturally to them. And part of this is why we cannot really fight against this, because they are so crazy in their violence that they're prepared to blow themselves up. So they've got no respect for their own life. So if, you know, so when you've got an instance like this happening, they can't say, well, we're going to bargain with you. And, you know, we've got our guns trained on you. So you're not going to kill anybody in there, are you? Because the guy that's in there, he's not going to care less. He's just going to kill everybody and then kill himself. He's got nothing left to lose. He thinks he's going to go off to heaven with all his virgins. I mean, that introduces something else as well, you know, pedophilia. You know, virgins are young girls, women. You know, women aren't virgins. I mean, these guys that think that they're going to go to paradise and be surrounded by virgins, the whole Islamic thing is just so barbaric and violent. And, you know, I just wanted to make a point of that. Just this barbarity of these non-whites and Arabs in particular.
Well, it's a critical point. I've been the last couple of weeks doing a lot of historical research on North American history and kind of the settling of the continent, and especially the conflicts between white settlers and white colonists with the Indians and Aboriginals. And we saw a similar level of violence there. I mean, and this is essentially the status quo for steppe and for nomadic people. And like what's happened in the Arab world is in the last 100 years since the destruction of, you know, the Ottoman Empire, the Ottoman Turks, who of course are infamous for their for their brutality and their, shall we say, un-Christian behavior, to put it very, very mildly. There's been this a total collapse in any sort of stability or restraining force among the Arab and Muslim populations, as we've discussed. And so, you know, we come back to this, Fenn, where you talked about how, you know, our leaders seem to have no idea as to what's going on here. Or, I kind of disagree, because I think that it's very well known by the security military establishment of the Western powers that mass migration has been used since time immemorial as a tool of warfare, and that population movements naturally bring along with it like low-level warfare between these discrete population groups. And so we talk a lot sometimes about fourth-generation warfare, this idea that you know, you can engage in conflict by proxy, or rather that conflict is cultural first and foremost, and that the violence is just a manifestation of that. And so that's kind of going back to it. That's what I see here, is that in France, if we go back to the 8th century, when, you know, these French war parties were crossing the Pyrenees into southern France and into places like this, and they were, you know, pillaging, they're raping, looting, that kind of thing, standard activity for, you know, these Muslim hordes and other non-white hordes, you know, in the ancient world. I don't see a lot of a difference. I mean, it's the same Berber mercenaries, the same, you know, part of the world, the same activities. And so kind of what I see this as, this is just to be expected. And I think that the real, you know, question to ask is that, you know, this all was allowed to occur. And I just don't see how there is any way that the powers that be, so to speak, the deep state, whatever term that you want to use, could not have foreseen such a heightening of violence and a heightening of national tensions. And I think that probably this is part of the idea, because by introducing this hostile foreign population who is predatory, who is constantly in conflict, like existentially, civilizationally, with the host population, you contribute to the rapid disintegration of that population, because you decrease the social trust even more, and you increase this kind of fear and social animosity and trauma. And it's these conditions which we know are very are perfect for controlling people, because it keeps people isolated, it keeps people afraid, it keeps people nervous. And when they're in such a state, they're malleable, they're susceptible to the imposition of outside narratives, of kind of propaganda, worldview control techniques, that kind of thing. So that's what kind of why I come back to it. So what is the, you know, why, who benefits from low-level warfare in the streets of France?
Well, it's a divide and conquer, isn't it? Divide and conquer, I think.
Exactly. And that's what it comes down to, is that the European race, the European nations, when they are organized, are extremely powerful, most powerful race of the world, objectively. And so to destroy the national coherence, the unity, the civilizational capital, all of this, the stuff that makes us white, the stuff that makes us European, French, and so on, is, I think, the end goal. It is essentially genocide, as we've discussed over and over again in this program. And so these, you know, I think these manifestations, as somebody was asking, you know, we have these terrorist attacks every couple of months now, you know, and there's this kind of a terrorist attack fatigue that people are getting. You know, it's like, oh, yes, another one. Of course, you know, he's a Muslim. Of course, this, that, and the other. And it will be, you know, swept under the rug in the next couple of weeks. And then we'll wait for the ever-increasing rapidity of the next incident. And so, you know, when is it going to get to the point where it's like, if, you know, you read the news from downtown Kabul and Baghdad, where this is an everyday thing. You know, you go outside the, you know, these safe zones in these downtown capitals and you read suicide bomber reports. What's the likelihood of suicide bomber activity in certain neighborhoods for that day? You know, I mean, it's shocking to me that, for instance, even in Syria, you know, that he's yelling about the situation, the urban warfare. There's the suburbs of Damascus are still a constant war zone and are constantly, you know, fought over. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that we're going to see, especially in some of these southern French cities where you have these, you know, 50%, you know, Muslim non-white cities, which are rapidly splintering and segregating themselves from the mainstream. But, I mean, none of this is new for any of our listeners, I'm certain.
Well, it's like in Britain, I mean, they say if 5% of the population is Muslim, but in 20 years' time, it's going to be 30% of the population due to the birth rate, due to the birth jihad. So if you think it's bad now, think what it's going to be like in 20 years. And one of the things people say is, oh, well, Muslims are the real victims because they attack Muslims more. But, you know, this is because in their own countries, it's just a fact of life that they blow each other up and kill one another and commit all these unspeakable crimes against one another. It's just a fact of life over there, but it doesn't have to be a fact of life over here.
Well, exactly. Yeah, this is point. Like people saying that Stalin is an anti-Semite, you know, because he purged all these Jews from the Communist Party, ignoring the fact the Communist Party was like 85% Jewish, right?
He just replaced them with other Jews. I mean, Stalin wasn't really an anti-Semite. It was just a power struggle between one set of Jews and another set of Jews, I think. But back to this, I mean, Islam calls for jihad. It's one of the five commandments of Islam is that they must commit jihad. And you've got ones that commit the birth jihad. You've got ones that commit the immigration jihad. You've got ones that commit the violent jihad. And the European governments will try and say, jihad, it's about, it's internal. It's about trying to conquer your evil urges. But the external jihad is about conquering what the Muslim sees as evil. And they see us as evil because we're not Muslims. Any method they can take to force us to submit to Sharia law is game for them. I mean, that's what Islam means. It means to submit. It's all about submitting to Sharia law. And they have these various ways of doing this. This is why they support them. You'll never hear of Muslims informing on another Muslim. You won't see, you'll see these imams come out and maybe they might condemn this. After the event, but you'll never hear of them preventing anything like this happening. And all the European governments seem to do is talk about how quick their response time is to this. They said, we managed to get to this incident within 15 minutes. But you wouldn't even have to get there if you didn't have the Muslims here. And you're never going to be able to get there fast enough. It's far better to prevent these things happening in the first place. I mean, these people that were killed, they would still be alive if the Muslims hadn't been brought into France. And this jihadi, he was known to police and he'd been on a watch list since 2014. So, and this is what we hear every time. We hear that the guy that did it was known to intelligence. He was being watched by the intelligence services and yet they weren't able to prevent this. I mean, this watch list doesn't do anything at all. It just means that when they do carry out a crime, we know some information about them. Once after they've been shot or after they've blown themselves up, we've got some information on them then. How does that help us? How does that help the 130 people that were killed in the Bataclan or the 419 people that were in there that were tortured? And how does that help these three people that were killed today? It doesn't. And I bet the families of these three people that are killed today will be saying, we must be careful that people don't make political value out of this. And we must be careful that people don't start criticizing Islam. But all the while we can't actually talk about it and we can't identify what the problem is, it's just going to get worse. I mean, what do Muslims bring to our countries that is of any value at all? If you talk to people, they will say, ah, well, either it's food, it's food that, kebabs and exciting food that we're not able to cook for ourselves, but we are able to cook it for ourselves. And I have heard another one, which is that Muslims bring money to our country, and it's the Arabs and Saudi Arabia and the money that they have invested in things, and they've invested in newspapers, and they bring a lot of money in. And I think maybe that does pay some part to it, is money. But the biggest thing is the government's fear of reprisals from Muslims if Islam were itself to be investigated. They know that if they were to go into the madrasas and find out what was actually said in there, then they would have to do something about it. They would have to ban the madrasas. And if they banned the madrasas, there would be Muslim uprisings. And because we know they are willing to kill themselves and blow themselves up, the government is just too fearful to do anything about it. So Islam has just got the European governments just bent over. And there's nothing the European governments can do, because they know that they would have to start deporting them if they were to investigate it. So it's like they're completely stuck, I think, Florian. Do you know what I mean? Their hands are tied.
Well, it's, I think this is, it's a good term for bureaucratic inertia, but this is more than bureaucratic inertia. It's like bureaucratic decadence, basically, where we've just come to this point where, you know, for whatever multiple conflagration of reasons, the state authorities are unwilling to exercise basic control over the state's security. They're unwilling to use violence to enforce the borders or national sovereignty or, you know, the internal safety of their citizens, homogeneity, of its blood, all of these basic jobs of the state. I mean, this is the whole reason why the state exists at all. And so, I mean, this is why we've kind of entered into clown world, is because, I mean, in the past, what would happen is that at least when things would get decadent, you know, people wouldn't throw away all pretenses of defending the borders. They simply would, you know, fight the battle and lose, or they'd hire mercenaries who would turn on them, or, you know, they would be unable to levy an army to begin with because they would be so broke. But we are in this absurd, you know, kind of clown world, malicious situation where it's not just that, it's inverted, because these people are not just unwilling to confront them with violence. They're actively inviting them in and precipitating the problem, and watering, money on this issue to develop and to create this situation. And so that's the thing, is if we go back, and look at the Sykes-Picot agreement that was signed between the British and French empires at the end of World War I, with the destruction of the, Turkish Sultanate and the Ottoman Empire, and the dividing of all of these countries into these, border zones. Right. So even 100 years, the foundation of such an absurd policy was laid, but it was laid by a government who, surely never would have accepted or conceived of itself of having devolved into this decadence 100 years hence, where it would have to deal with the policy results of its inflammation of, Middle Eastern tribal tensions, because there was never somebody back then who had such a weak will or such a weak soul that they wouldn't defend their country at a basic level from the Mohammedan hordes. And this is the question that we come back to, is that whether, I'm perfectly personally convinced that it's an active and malicious attempt to subvert and to destroy the European peoples and the nations of Europe. But the solution to this is the development, of the soul. It's how do you get a state and a government and a people to stand back up when they've kind of gotten to the point where they are willing to die. I mean, this is the question, because this behavior can only be described as suicidal, as self-destructive.
It's like the state has abdicated.
Right? I mean, just that. Yeah.
Do you think it's like the state has abdicated on its responsibility to its people? And I think there are people in the government who are deliberately doing this, and they do want to see Europeans wiped out, and they do want to see white people wiped out, and they want to see us interbreeding with the non-whites and turn us all into Arab hordes. And there is a portion of people that are in the state that are like that. And I think there's also another portion of people in the state who believe all the propaganda, and they believe that religion really is, Islam really is a religion of peace. And they know individual Muslims who wouldn't do anything like this. And they think that it's just nasty right wingers that are pointing this out, but they won't actually look into it for themselves. And then I think we've got another portion of people who are just too fearful of what will happen. They know the truth, but they're too fearful of what will happen if they speak up or if they investigate Islam. They know that it's going to create chaos. So they kick the ball down the road, knowing that there's going to be a civil war in the years to come. There's going to be war and blood on our streets because they failed to do anything. But they've shown us time and time again that they don't have any concern for future generations. They've mortgaged away future generations. They've sold all the jobs of the future generations. We're going to be in debt for another 100 years just to pay back the financial crash from 10 years back. And they've shown that they don't care what happens to their children and their grandchildren. So why would they care that there's going to be a civil war in the future if they can just avert it for now? If they can just silence the people that are speaking up about it now, then they can prevent it from happening and kick the ball on down the road. There's one other thing that I wanted to bring up. I mean, we often get accused of, you think that a black Christian is closer to you than a white man who is not a Christian. And another thing that gets said is that on the other side, you hear people saying, if only we could convert these Muslims into Christians, so they would be absolutely fine then. But both of those aren't true, because this problem is a racial problem. It's not a cultural problem. I mean, the African continent is 80% Christian. Whether that's the same, well, obviously it's not the same sort of Christianity as we have in the West, but they consider themselves to be Christian. And Nigeria is the country that has had the largest growth in Christianity. And the country is known for cannibalism and stealing money from old people on the internet. Just in 2014, there was a restaurant there with roasted human heads on the menu. And this is the country with the biggest growth in Christianity. The whole continent, as I say, is 80% Christian, and yet it's the most violent continent on earth. I mean, it doesn't matter if these people are Christian or if these people are Muslim, that they're still going to behave the same way. I mean, I would suggest that obeying Christian laws is probably far more beneficial for them than obeying Islamic laws, but that's still no reason to have them in our countries. They are a different race. The black Christian is not my brother. The white man is my brother, and the white Christian is somebody who understands my ideals and that I feel, you know, a spiritual sense of kinship with. But the black Christian is not really any different to me than a black Muslim. It's somebody else. It's somebody who shouldn't be here. You know, that's my views on it. And, you know, this is a racial problem. It's not a religious problem. It's not a cultural problem. It's not if we can just teach them British values, then they will stop blowing themselves up and stop attacking us. You know, they hate these British values. They see them as, you know, they see them as weak and rightly so. I mean, that's what has allowed them to come into our countries and do this to us, is this nonsense about us all being equal. And they know damn well they're not equal. That's one of the reasons why they attack us, isn't it?
Well, this kind of meme is just its, you know, raw subversion. And it's kind of ironic that we see like talking points that are used by, you know, the left 50 years ago, repeated by some sectors on the right to try and, you know, literally in the same context, to try and discredit Christianity. And so, I mean, it's the whole issue with the statement is that the premise is totally, it's insane. The idea that membership in your country, which has been whose population is shaped by, you know, thousands of years of blood and culture, of interaction, of all of these invisible markers that no, you know, that one cannot quantify. The idea that, you know, somebody from a totally different part of the world, different racial, cultural group, just because they have the same religion as you, is that means that it's a good idea to bring them to your country. That, or that they should be allowed to come here and settle, that, you know, the mass importation of hundreds of thousands of these people is in any way a good idea or some sort of Christian virtue is nonsense. It's a non sequitur, because it doesn't even follow the basic premise of inclusion in the nation, which is blood. And so that's what it comes down to, is that the governance of our own people, of who is a member of our folk, these are questions which are separate from the religious denomination of some African or Arabic person. You know, of course, and I think that it's a good thing, and I wish that they would convert to Christianity. That's not a question. But this is the thing. And I guess that when people tell you things like this, this is what we need to just point out, that this is like, it's subversive and tricky. It's not even operating in good faith. And so there's no need to engage with somebody based on their false premises. The idea that, you know, your religion is the same thing as your ethnicity. And it's totally absurd. Right. And I guess but that's the level that we've gotten to, is that people prefer to argue by obfuscation and by, you know, these kind of rhetorical tricks rather than addressing the heart of the issue. And oftentimes people are just convinced by these kind of like gotcha questions and these like, there you go. And
that's a good point.
This is why, this is why history is so important, because, I mean, if you can't lie to history. I mean, if you a cursory glance at the history of European nations over the last 2,000 years reveals to you the vapidity, the emptiness, the insanity of everything these people are trying to say that Christianity is, or that our people stood for, or what we actually have been all about for the last several thousand years of our existence.
Now, they certainly didn't try to convert them when they were in the Crusades. You know, it was all about just slaughter them. There was no, well, we must convert these Arabs and Muslims to Christianity. It was kill the dogs, kill the heathens, kill the infidels. You know, never any idea of trying to convert, never any idea of let's bring them into our countries and try to teach them our values. It was no, keep them separate from us. We didn't want to invade their countries. We just wanted to defend our own. And that's what we should be doing now. And don't forget, this guy said, this is for Syria. I'm working for Islamic State. And the source of that is us interfering in their countries. What we need to do is stop interfering in the Arab countries and send all the Arabs back and send all the Negroes back. And everything would be so simple then if we just looked after our own and ignored what was going on everywhere else. Okay. Thanks for coming on today, Florian. I've enjoyed that. I think that was a good podcast. I know our listeners are going to enjoy it. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday, hopefully with Max Masson. So until then, I say God bless and hail victory.